Sandale. He's been on the program many times. And I'll tell you what, the man just keeps, his earthquake predictions are almost scary in their accuracy. He accurately, I mean, like less than a 12-hour window, but he said, yeah, we're going to have one up there in Alaska. And sure enough, it was over seven. They were thinking about, I think maybe they issued a tsunami warning and then retracted it. It didn't produce anything serious, and we're happy about that. But that's just anytime Stan keep just, you know, hits two or three over the fence and out into the parking lot, then we got to do the Deo. Deo, because Deo rocks, okay? All right, very good. Make sure and cruise by the old coasttocoastam.com website. You will find things in there that you will find, well, interesting. I say find twice. Well, look, there was three times. And let's see what else. What else? I know. Dave Gardner's coming up next, and it's going to be a good one. It's to grow or not to grow, to buy new or not, to redefine the American dream. Yeah, because I think for a while we've let people that, well, Dave and I have both worked for over the years sort of define it for us, and maybe we should just define it ourselves. We'll be right back with Dave Gardner, first-time guest on Coast to Coast AM, his film Growth Busters, Hooked on Growth. Please stand by. We shall return in just a couple of minutes. All right, without further ado, let's bring onto the bridge of the mothership Dave Gardner. David, how are you? It turns out it's a small world after all, yes?
Isn't it, though? Yes. You and I have worked together many times.
Yes, we have. Back in the day, and now you have you have turned your camera on our modern society, and I mean, you're really committed to exposing the impossibility of this unending growth.
Yeah, and I guess it is kind of strange because back when you and I worked together, I hired you to narrate films for me from time to time, and I was working for companies that had a real vested interest in growing not only their bottom line, but growing the population, growing their market, and without real regard for what really counts in life. And it's been a complete about face for me to discover that being successful at that didn't really improve my life.
You know, this is just, there's too much synchronicity here for me not to mention this, but not only is this the one-year anniversary of my being able to come on to this program in the Saturday night position, but this is also the anniversary, I mean, I hesitate to say how many decades ago. In fact, I don't think I will, but Capitol Hill correspondent James Allen Mikliszewski, it just calls himself Jim Mikliszewski now, was was my very first boss back at a little radio station back in the day. And about a year later, things began to develop in Dallas, and I was able to meet some very excellent and very kind producers like yourself who would hire me to do these various jobs. So it's just so amazing to have you on the program on this particular date. I mean, it's probably doesn't make a dime's worth of difference to most people, but I'll tell you, it certainly does to me. So I just can't think of a better first time guest to have on the program than yourself. Let's get into this a little bit. We just had this presidential election. The big issue was which candidate will restore robust economic growth. I mean, I kind of put my money on the businessman, but whatever, you know, it doesn't matter. I kind of saw the writing on the wall from the beginning. It was just like, well, maybe somebody will take over and run the United States of America Incorporated like a real company. But the gross domestic product and the job creation was getting more headlines than any other topic. But it's not happening. So it kind of raises some interesting questions about our quest for economic growth and whether or not it's even possible at this point, particularly since China's taken over so much of our manufacturing and other countries.
Yeah, and it's certainly a complex subject, but I wrote a blog post, an essay for the Center for the Advancement of the Steady State Economy before the election, predicting that it didn't matter. A lot of things mattered, who would be elected, but regardless of which candidate was elected, we would not see a restoration of economic growth. And we've kind of seen during the last 12 months a number of very well-respected financial gurus have begun questioning whether we are experiencing the end of growth, or you know, they have a hard time with that. So they, in some cases, couch it as a big slowdown, that we will not return for a long time, they say, to those thrilling days of yesteryear when we had 3% annual economic growth come easy. And this really plays right into what I've been researching for the past 7 years, and the large part of the subject of my film Growth Busters, and that is the possibility that that we have filled up the planet, and it's just one planet, it's finite, and growth can't continue.
Yeah, I was wondering about, I was thinking about capitalism some time ago, and I thought, you know, it appears that you expand and expand and expand, and then you contract, and you throw a few people out of the system. It's either that, or you print more money and just kind of keep it rolling, which is what we seem to be experiencing now. And I thought, it's impossible to just continue to expand your markets. At some point, every endeavor is going to reach that saturation point.
And yeah, we've seen that. Companies definitely go through that. You know, there is not one company that has survived, you know, over the years, and the ones that have survived the longest haven't, you know, stayed absolutely mammoth in proportion. And I think we have to kind of get over ourselves and recognize that, you know, we human beings, you know, are not necessarily masters of the universe. We're pretty smart, but sometimes we're too smart for our own good. And it could be that our civilization is reaching maturity. And that really is kind of a good thing, because I've witnessed that we give up a lot in our pursuit of economic growth. We give up quality of life. We give up environmental integrity. We actually give up a lot of our own money in the form of tax-supported growth subsidies, believe it or not. If it turns out that growth really isn't even possible anymore, and it's been costing us so much, we've given up so much in our pursuit of it, then it might actually free us up to, you know, kind of say, well, maybe that wasn't the final answer. Maybe there's something, maybe there's a better way to organize our society.
Well, you know, I don't want to get on too long of a side trip, but it seems to be about philosophy. I mean, how long can you listen to just the mantra of, you know, home ownership is the American dream? Well, it's the American dream for some, and it's the American nightmare for others. But, you know, when you just have this continuously hammered into your head, you know, let's face it, economic growth has improved our lives. We got indoor plumbing now, and we have all electric smart homes and cars and pizza rolls and stuff like that. We can pop into the microwave. So, I mean, there have been some, you know, some real advantages to economic growth. But the thing is, the philosophy that protects us from our own human nature seems to be absent. And when you get people saying, Gecko, greed is good. And it's like, yeah, that's kind of catchy. I kind of like that. Yeah, greed is good. Greed is just the desire to accumulate things. Well, it appears that greed has become avarice, where you, not only are you wanting to collect things, but you're willing to, you know, screw people over in order to collect things. And that's, it's the avaricious nature of our money system now, of capitalism, that has really left a bad taste in a lot of people's mouths.
Well, I think it's worth sticking with philosophy for a while, because that really is the fundamental basis of this discussion, I think. And economic growth is really just a pretty recent phenomenon in the history of humankind. We've been on a binge for, you know, about 200 years, really, since we discovered the amazing power of fossil fuels and the steam engine, mass production, a vast new continent of untapped resources. All of that kind of hit all at the same time and kind of launched us into what I call a binge. And you could say maybe the party's over. But I think there's this assumption that we have now that economic growth is responsible for all the improvements we got. And I beg to differ about that. I think, because growth is just more of, it's more extraction, more production, more consumption, more financial transactions than this year than you had last year. And it's not the fact that we had more of those that brought all of these improvements into our lives. It was really just our, you know, it was our innovation. It was our technology. And it was largely tapping the power of oil and natural gas and coal. So we might have gotten confused, and the economists have done a pretty good job of confusing themselves even about this economic growth being the Holy Grail. And it only became the Holy Grail in the middle of the last century. But we've been listening to them for so long that I believe that they have convinced us that, you know, that we aren't good. They've convinced us that if there isn't a dollar in it for us, we're not going to do the right thing.
That's very interesting. Let me ask you this. What is the growth when we speak of growth and sustaining growth? I mean, what sort of growth is it? Is it we've got 10,000 pickup trucks here and we've got to move them out because the 2014s are coming already? Is that the kind of growth that we mean? Are we talking about the proliferation of additional material things, or when we talk about growth, are we talking about the money games that represent power?
Well, I think we're talking about all those things. I think they're all components. And in fact, what I think is sort of the granddaddy of them all is just growth in the scale of the human enterprise. If we want to talk about just, you know, our survival as a species on the planet, we have to address that. But I don't want to direct attention away from those very good questions that you just asked. But I do want to, you know, offer my definition of growth and the kind of growth that I'm busting as a growth buster in the world. And I have made it my mission in life to make it okay to be against growth. That growth is just the scale of the human enterprise, which is how many of us there are, and how much we're consuming, the size of our economy, it turns out, really is what that is. And you multiply those two together, and that determines whether the party can continue for very long or not. But all the other things, the accumulating money for power and keeping up with the Joneses and just the materialism, that's all a part of the system that we've created it. But we've created a monster, and I think what happened somewhere along the line is the definition of the good life, the definition of the American dream, got hijacked, and it stopped meaning having quality time with the people you love. It stopped meaning having your basic needs met, a roof over your head, and the ability to have a meaningful and fulfilled life, and it started meaning having the latest iPhone. That meant, driving a Range Rover, or a better car than your neighbor had. It meant having a bigger house than the friends you graduated from college with. But we really did start comparing ourselves to each other and evaluating our success based on how many toys we had accumulated.
Everybody likes that new car smell. You know, I finally figured out what that is. It's windshield glass sealer.
Is that it?
Yeah, that's what it is. All right. I thought, wow. You know, I got this thing came flying out from under this van and like smacked my windshield like a cannonball. I had to replace the bloody thing. And I thought, wow, car smells new again. It's windshield sealer for sure. I'm not really sure it's good for you.
Yeah, they probably don't want that getting out. People will be concentrating that in paper bags.
Yeah, no, oh dear. Yeah, not that again. All right, let me ask you this. What is the presumption of what growth will bring us? As we sit here, you know, just as regular citizens, just, you know, seeing the signs, the billboards, and hearing the radio ads, the TV ads about all this great stuff that's available to us and so forth. I mean, what are we thinking that growth is going to bring us? I mean, we've got lower interest rates on mortgages, for example, now than ever before. When the economy was going, you know, great guns, that, you know, you got 9, 10, 11% interest in some cases. Getting it down to 8 was like a really big deal. Now it's like in the 3s. It's just ridiculous. I mean, what did everybody think? What did the mass consciousness think growth was going to bring us?
I think there may be a two-part answer to that. One, of course, is jobs. That's kind of the big one today is, the headlines really celebrate, if we did buy more cars last month than the month before, because that meant we had to make more cars, and that meant more auto workers were employed. And the headlines celebrate if retail sales are up, because that means more people are employed in retail, but also that means that more people are employed manufacturing the goods that we bought at the retail establishment. So that's a big part of it, especially in a day and age when, unemployment is as high as it is. But I think deeper than that, we have come to believe that that we could be rich, that if we just happen to start the right company with the right idea, we can build it into the next Facebook or Google and cash out and buy an island and live that quote-unquote good life. And that opportunity really is available to very, very few people. And I'm not saying we shouldn't have that opportunity available, but I think it drives, millions and millions of us to trade our quality time, the quality of our lives in this, to step onto a treadmill, chasing that dream.
And just grinding your life out in pursuit of it.
We do, and I think the growth boosters that I mentioned in the Growth Busters movie, that, there are growth boosters that it's in their interest to keep us on that treadmill. So they generate a fair amount of propaganda. You can't miss it. It's everywhere, every day, in the advertising and in the news, and even in what our politicians tell us. And it all sort of designed to keep us on that treadmill, to keep us playing by the rules, really, so that they can get rich. They want more of us. They've really dehumanized us. They encourage us to actually encourage us to make babies, to pop out more consumers and more people to compete for jobs, so that the cost of labor for the elite, the wealthy people who own the means of production, and I know this is starting to sound almost a little communist, but that's so that they can keep the game going. And I'm certainly not a communist, but I have come to believe that we're being manipulated.
Go ahead. Being manipulated to what degree and in what direction?
Well, I think it's a huge degree. We are manipulated to behave ourselves and stay in this system. We're manipulated to put up with a lot of crap, if you will, only because there's this chance, that we'll get our slice of that, our bigger slice of that pie. But the pie isn't getting any bigger, and it wasn't a problem for a long time. It wasn't a problem during most of the last century because we hadn't appropriated every slice of the pie. But now we have, we just passed through 7 billion people on the planet last year, and many of the people on the planet who were living much more close to subsistence level are improving their lives, and they have every right to do that. But what that means is that we've filled up the planet, and we're putting pressure on the planet to provide for more needs than it can, and so we've got to slice that pie into smaller and smaller slices. But the people who have the big slices all along, they don't want to give up any of those slices, so they have to manipulate us. They've got to keep us. That's got to keep that carrot on a stick in front of us and keep us from realizing that the American dream of having more stuff, they want us to think that that's still alive and that's still possible, but it's not. And the good news is, it's really not all that anyway, because that wasn't making us happy. All the studies that have been done that try to gauge people's life satisfaction and happiness show that that we just haven't made any gains over the last three decades. We've really flatlined, and people don't get happier after they have their basic needs met. Having more material possessions, more financial wealth, doesn't improve their happiness.
Okay, well, maybe it goes back to that thing in Fight Club, the stuff that you own actually owns you. We will continue our most singular discussion with Dave Gardner when Coast to Coast AM continues. Never want to just let it go. I just would like to express my appreciation to Richard, who clarified a little something for me. A while ago we were talking about FDR. And his third term, actually, FDR died at the beginning of his fourth term, not his third. As Richard pointed out, it's a small error, but, you know, we don't need any threats, large or small, to our credibility. Just kind of state the facts, and if we make a mistake, then we'll come back and pick it up and say, hey, we made a mistake, and here's the addition. So there you go. He made it into his fourth term. It happened before, it can happen again. Remember, the thing that has been done is the thing that will be done, and there ain't nothing new under the sun. I'm paraphrasing. We'll be right back with Dave Gardner. This is Coast to Coast AM. All right, Dave Gardner, let's just carry on with this here. Now, first of all, where can your film be seen?
The film is actually available to be ordered on the internet. If you go to growthbusters.org, you can order your own copy and actually organize a screening if you like. Or you can look at the events and screening listings on our website to see if there's a screening near you. It's a little bit slow on the screenings right now because the film's been out for about a year now, and also because of the holidays, it's a little slow. So,
sure.
But we depend on just grassroots support out there around the world, and people have shown it just in just about every country in the world because they believe it's an important message we need to get out.
Well, all right then. Let me ask you this. Going back to this philosophy.
Let me ask you a question. Can I offer your listeners a discount if they decide they want to order the film?
No, absolutely, positively.
Okay, and I do want to mention I'm not really a big self-promoter, and I'm not making, I wish I was making a little bit of money on this, but it's an official non-profit project, and in fact, people can even donate at our website, make tax-deductible donations. But I did think it would be pretty cool just to offer people who discover the film in our conversation tonight 25% off if they decide to order the film. So there's a discount code when you order it. If you just enter Coast to Coast, and that's just to be clever, of course, I put the number 2 in there between the two coasts. So it's Coast, the number 2, and then Coast, all run together, and that'll get you 25% off.
Well, that sounds pretty good, and let's be sure and mention that 2 or 3 times during the course of the program, because how long did it take you to put this film together?
Oh, it's almost shameful to have to admit it. It took me about 6 years, partly because I was trying to raise the money to put the film together, and it's such a radical concept to question the most basic fundamental underpinnings of our modern culture. Not a lot of people understood it, so it was challenging. So I was busy raising money while I was producing it, but it made it. The benefit of that was it gave me a long time to research the subject and really get deep into it and kind of go through a journey of my own to discover what it was I was really investigating. And the film changed a lot during that time.
You know, I just have to ask. There's money in crime. We know that not only on the criminal enterprise itself producing, money and in some cases vast riches for people, but also there's a huge law enforcement apparatus that is also being funded by through the necessity of combating this criminal element. So. Now when we get to the overpopulation and the faltering economy part, have you observed that there's money in poverty, and is there anything to suggest that maybe the powers that be already knew that they were approaching endgame with the current, economic structure, and that they're well aware that this is going to fall down and that there will be a soaking of those who have resources to be soaked, and it'll be redistributed to an ever-growing class of poor people who will rely on some sort of governmental assistance just to survive?
Well, that's a really a great question. I think there's definitely signs, I think, that a lot of the people who have the bigger slices of the pie are certainly they're feeling threatened, very threatened. I think it's interesting that at the same time, most of them are encouraging us to, you know, to keep playing the game. They're so hooked on growth that they can't join in the growing movement to embrace a more sustainable philosophy, a prosperity strategy that actually gives us all a chance to go on living on the planet and gives our kids and our grandchildren a fair chance at living good lives. They can't bring themselves to embrace that, and yet they know that it's going to crash, and that's why they buy islands. That's why they're behind walls and locked gates and guarded fortresses to try to keep to keep the riffraff out. Of course, if and when things really get bad, when more than just the poorest billion people are starving, when the next billion and the next billion begin to starve, then I don't think they're going to be successful at keeping the people at bay. And I don't know what that's going to look like. But you probably have talked to a few survivalists, even people who aren't wealthy, are trying to prepare for, you know, what some people might think would be the end of times, when you have to take out a rifle to protect your food.
Yeah, that is the nightmare scenario. You know, I was thinking, gee, what if it was one of these? Let's just write a little futuristic science fiction kind of a thing here. You have your economic collapse. The government defaults on its debts. So there's a big run on the banks. And I was saying this earlier, the dollar is still the medium of exchange for financial transactions, but the problem is no one has any money. It's just pretty much like it was in the 1930s. The money was worth something, but no one had any. So then, you know, you take people who live 20, 30, 40, 50, 100 miles out from a decent-sized metropolitan area, a city center, as it were, and now you have people who are unarmed, either by choice or because the government came by and picked them all up. But when you consider the Zetas, for example, big drug gang down there in Mexico, they're mostly Mexican army deserters, and they have, you know, every weapon they could possibly want. They don't need some little AKs coming in from, you know, a fast and furious operation. They're well armed. They have everything. They have just about everything the military has, and probably an armored vehicle here or there. So now you have these marauding bands of people because the police are stretched so thin that they're not effective. And in fact, maybe the population has gotten so crazy that in its distress and grief and deprivation that maybe there are some policemen that don't even own up to being policemen anymore. Maybe they've just decided to fade into the citizenry and stay out of that. So now you got the military, but they're stretched thin too. We're involved overseas, and now we have domestic problems here. You know, the military immediately takes us to DEFCON 2 because as social unrest, you know, rolls out across the United States domestically, well, then that's a very good opportunity for our international enemies to take a punch at us. And I'm looking at this going, could this really devolve into some sort of a Mad Max thing? You know, the road warrior scenario where a bunch of ragtags are trying to get a tanker full of fuel so they can keep going for a while. I mean, I just wonder if these creations are projections that actually cause us to bring them into reality, or if they're prophetic and they're just actually visions of what must inevitably happen based on some, you know, primal understanding that this game is just not going to go on like this.
Before I started researching this and working on this film, I never thought for a minute that there was a future scenario like that. I loved the Mad Max film, and once I got into this, I actually thought I might actually show a few clips from the film in Growth Busters, just because I thought it was a pretty darn good, illustration of what the future could have in store. Now, because of the research I've done, I've become convinced that that is a very real possibility. There are a growing number of very smart people that I stay in touch with right now who, you know, a lot of them are ready to throw in the towel. They feel like, you know, the human race has failed the test and there's no avoiding a pretty ugly future. I personally, I wouldn't have made the film if I was that pessimistic. I'm still, you know, just because I've finished Growth Busters 1 doesn't mean I'm not starting to think about Growth Busters 2 and a TV series and a book. And I'm going to continue to try to raise awareness of the detour that we've gone off on and how we can get back on track. But I'm optimistic. I'm optimistic that there is still time for us to recognize that we took an exit off of the freeway to true fulfillment and happiness, and we can get back on that course. But you know, I got to be honest, it's not looking like the odds are in our favor.
Yeah.
And that's exactly, I mean, what you've described, I think, you know, is unavoidable. If business as usual continues, that is exactly what we'll be living. And I think your listeners will be shocked at how soon that may happen.
You know, Dave, this may not be your thing, but and if it's not, it's okay. We'll just go past it. What do you make of all this unbelievable accumulation of ammunition by Department of Homeland Security? I mean, what possible reason other than anticipation of civil unrest would there be to acquire this amount of munitions?
Oh, you know, I have no problem with that that topic at all. I don't have a lot of expertise in it, but I know that the Department of Defense is better informed about all of this than the rest of us. I think they have a real accurate understanding of what we're doing to ourselves and where we're heading. So, you know, you get glimpses of some of these reports, and I think they're preparing. I don't know if I would say properly, but maybe wisely, they're preparing for what is very likely to happen. I don't know what they think what the end game is, John. Do you think that they think that they just have to protect the billionaires? Because I don't think they can protect everybody.
I don't think they can either. And the thing is we already have quite a large, and the thing about it is, Dave, this is the thing that gets me a little bit. I mean, you and I can get as radical here tonight as we want to. We can discuss the most obtuse concepts that we could possibly develop in the course of our conversation. But some of it, I wonder if it even should be discussed, because we have this, for example, this burgeoning group of poor people, meaning that they cannot make it without some sort of public assistance. They just can't do it. But I don't see anybody saying we're going to put $50 billion. We're going to go to Congress, we're going to appropriate $50 billion of very carefully supervised finances for the creation of job programs, and we're going to bring our production back from overseas because we need stuff that's built by highly trained American technicians. I don't see that happening, and I'm wondering, you know, the population growth in Europe, for example, is dropping among the original Europeans, and yet in other parts of the world, India, you know, Africa, other places, the population is increasing. I mean, what about them? Everybody's got to eat. What do we do about this? And it seems like the more aid we send, the more opportunities we give the local warlords in some of these parts of the world, the ability to use food as a weapon even more so. I mean, in effect, even more people. So, I mean, where do the poor fit into all of this? If there is no more growth, then don't they take it on the chin even harder than they're taking it now?
Well, that's a huge question. You know, and I think we can all agree that we want the people who don't have their needs met today to have a chance to, you know, to at least have their basic needs met. But in some ways, it's not about what we want, but it's about what's possible. And it's about physical limits and what the earth and nature will allow. And we, you know, we really blew it when we let population just get, you know, just run away during the last 100 years. You know, 100 years ago, we were, you know, down around 2 billion people, and now we're already at 7 in just a blink of an eye in human history. And the planet cannot. Every scientist I've talked to and all of the studies I've looked at that have tried to do their best of quantifying what the resources are on the planet and how we're doing it at living off of them today indicate that that the planet cannot provide a good life for 7 billion people. And we're projected to go to pass through 10 billion before the end of this century. It used to be 9 billion. Now they're saying 10. We can't even do it with 7. We can't do it well. We can't have that many people on the planet having meaningful work, full employment, and living even at a modest, let's say a modest European lifestyle. The Europeans live a little lighter on the planet than we do here in North America. So if that's impossible, then I think we need a much more radical approach to meeting those needs. And there's two parts to that. One is there's a growing, ironically, movement called degrowth that really, and this is not necessarily something we want to hear, but these guys recognize that those of us who have been blessed to live in places like North America, where we're really over-consuming, you know, that we have got to scale back to make room for the poorest people on the planet to have a little bit of the resources of the earth. And that doesn't mean we write them a check, you know, because, you know, as you mentioned, that those aid programs haven't worked well. But what we've got to do is we've got to stop exploiting those people and exploiting their resources. Globalization has not worked in their favor. That's one part. And then the other part is, even here in the United States, how are we going to get everybody who needs a job and wants a job full employment if we can't have economic growth? And we can't. You know, Earth is saying, nope, that's about it. And the only way we can do that is, I think, is to share our jobs. It's for each of us who is doing okay to scale back and unplug from the system enough to where we can work 20-hour week instead of the 50 that so many of us are now. We step off the treadmill. We step out of the rat race. And it sounds a little scary. And it is scary if you're leveraged to the hilt. You know, if you're bought into the system, hook, line, and sinker, and you've got mortgage payments, and you've got loans on cars, and you've got too many toys, too expensive vacations, and all that. You've got a little bit of work to do before you can actually pull that off without meltdown. But the good news is, I haven't run into anyone who's voluntarily adjusted their life, skinnied up their life, and taken back some of their time, traded some of their money and their toys for time, who has been unhappy about that. Because when, you know, it's a cliche, but when, you know, no one on their deathbed says, I wish I spent more time at the office. I would expand that to say no one on their deathbed wishes they'd had more cars or a bigger house or bought an island. No, what do you wish when you're, you know, living in your dying days? You wish you had known your kids better, spent more quality time with your spouse, you know, done something really good and meaningful with your life that had nothing to do with making money. So I think that's the only way we're ever going to lift the poor out of poverty, especially with, you know, until we get the world population back down to something like 2 or 3 billion.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what then. Tell our listeners the promo code and where they can obtain their Coast to Coast AM listener discount on your film.
You can visit growthbusters.org, www.growthbusters.org, and right there on the homepage, there's a big red button on the right side that says buy the film. Click on that. And that'll take you into our store. And there's an easy spot to, once you've started placing an order for one or two or however many copies of the DVD you might want, you put in Coast to Coast. That's the word Coast, the number 2, and then the word Coast, all run together. You'll get 25% off if you order the film. Now, I have limited the the time. I think I've got that set to expire in a little less than a week. So don't procrastinate. Okay.
All right. Excellent. Well, when we come back, let's get into exactly what areas are we over-consuming in, and if we pull back from participation, will that help us or will it hurt us? We're speaking with our first-time guest tonight, Dave Gardner, on Coast to Coast AM. We shall return.